You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Man, good morning, guys. My name's Derek, and this is my beautiful wife, Laurel. And if we've never met before, we're so glad that you're here. You're joining us in a series that we've been in now for several weeks called All Good in the Hood. And what we've been doing is we've been walking through the different hoods of life, the different arenas that we would find ourselves in relationships in. And we've just been trying to bring simple truths to those complicated relationships. And this morning together, we get to have a conversation about spousehood. And we're really excited about that.
I'm so excited to join Derek because we just have, even from dating, we've loved the idea and just had this affinity towards relationships and marriage and the idea of two becoming one. And that's continued for the last 12 years as we try to play hookup and encourage all of you guys to date. And we just, we love the idea of marriage. So we're excited.
Absolutely. The passage that's kind of framing the whole morning for us is Ephesians 5:31. And it's where Paul was reflecting on what happens in Genesis. And he says, a man would leave his father and mother, and he would become one flesh with his wife. And I love there's this passage in there, this one phrase that says, this is a profound mystery. And that's what we want to talk about this morning, the mystery of marriage. And so we're going to just kind of get into it for a little bit. We hope that this is an impactful conversation for those of you who are not married, who are married, who are on the other side of marriage. And we hope that this is a blessing to you.
As we were talking about mystery, we read about this awesome idea that existed in our talk and in our relationship over the past years, but it put a name to it. And it's this idea that God, he is so magnificent, so big, he fills every space, but he had to actually, in order to have a relationship with humanity, draw himself back and contract and to make a space to have a relationship with us. And it's this idea, this word called Zimzum. And that's what happens when marriage occurs too, is that you take part of yourself and retract, draw back, and there becomes a space that you can't even explain. It's mysterious in between you. And we're going to kind of go through some of the ideas around that today.
Yeah, absolutely. This idea of us retracting can kind of sound crazy to people, especially if you're single. It might sound like you're settling or sound like you're making less of yourself, but really it's not about that. But it is confusing because we believe that healthy relationships require two healthy people. And so we could spend our whole lives trying to become healthy in our singlehood, and Pastor Shalice just did an incredible talk about that last week. And so it's an interesting thing to think about going from this incredibly healthy, independent person where your center of gravity, it exists here. And then all of a sudden you move into a relationship with someone else and your center of gravity, it moves to this place between the two of you. And it's this space that we begin to share with each other. And it's a clumsy thing sometimes as that center of gravity moves, as we learn how to interact and move from independence to interdependence. And it's a profound mystery, like Paul says. But not only is it a mystery that we would find each other in marriage, but sometimes it's also a miracle. Like, it's a miracle that a woman like you would settle for a guy like me. How does something like that even happen?
So Derek and I met, you want to know, we're going to date ourselves right now, because 15 years ago we met at the beginning of college, such a fun time, and we were both dating other people and developed a really cool friendship. And I was determined. I told him once we were both single and not dating anyone, I knew he was pursuing me a little bit, and I made it very clear. I said, just to let you know, I'm not dating anyone until I finish my degree, and then I go to med school, and then I do this, and then maybe I'll consider it. And 2 weeks later, that Zimzum space, it was this thing that we couldn't describe, this attraction, this space that developed in between us. That caused me to make big changes in my life too, and change my career choice to pursuing a master's in medicine instead of a doctorate. And we changed the places we wanted to live and what we were pursuing. We retracted and made space for that Zimzum flow in between us to start happening. And we decided on a commitment to each other, and ultimately that commitment led to marriage.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Once again, only took me 2 weeks for this tough nut to crack. But, you know, it's an interesting thing when you think about this idea that Laurel would have sacrificed her dream, her career of being a physician, and instead became a physician assistant. You can look at that and you say, wow, that's how sad she settled for less, until you see me, who she, you know, gave all that up for. But really, it's not about settling. It's about finding satisfaction. And I think there's something that happens when you give something up to gain something else that you never could have had without it. And that's really what marriage is all about. But we have an interesting response to marriage in our culture right now. And in fact, I work in the fire department. It's a very interesting space to work. In fact, it's one of the highest industries where divorce is prevalent. And it's a place where people's interaction with marriage is it's messed up. It's dangerous. It's skewed. But it's not just in the fire department. It's really in our world, because the way we relate in our society is a very different space than the way marriage existed in the scriptures. And we continually find ourselves against these odds as Christians, as followers of Jesus, where we have a society and a culture that's pointing to an institution, to a convention that people point to, and they say it's old-fashioned, it's outdated, it's irrelevant. And there's so many cases trying to be argued to say that, well, we don't need a piece of paper or this old school process to prove our love to each other. We don't need this formal thing, and we can just we can love each other without that. And we absolutely believe that's true, that you can love each other without it. But there's something about marriage that moves us to a place where it's actually possible to stay faithful in love. And I think the two different words that kind of draw the difference here is consumerism and covenant. And we, as a society, we're so dominated by the marketplace. We are consumers, we are capitalists, and that finds its way into our relationships. And so our relationships become transactional. They become this consumeristic approach where, as long as somebody is giving us something back, as long as it's worth the cost, as long as it's worth the investment that we're giving, it's possible. But as soon as it costs us too much, as soon as I'm giving more than they're giving me, then we simply cut our losses. And I think we exist in this space because every other convention and every other arena in our society is motivated by this capitalistic, consumeristic thing. So we actually have no reference for this idea of covenant. Covenant's not a word we use. In fact, there's nothing else in our society or culture today that we even use that word. But in the time where the scriptures were being written and the people of God were being formed, covenant was a normal thing. It was an oath, it was a commitment, it was a connecting that you not only made between you and the other person, but it was a public thing that you made before others. But ultimately, it was a declaration that you made before God. And there were all of these facets that moved into different spaces that would help you stay faithful to the decision that you're making now. And the only thing I can think of that's kind of like it right now, because we know that we live in a society where contracts are meant to be broken, right? So even when you like run your credit card up, you know that there's like, you know, you can default on that and you can go bankrupt and there's always a way out. Even in marriage today, there's prenups and there's all of these things where it's easy to get out of that contract. But the one weird thing that you can't get out of is school loans, right? Like if you've taken out school loans, it's like the closest thing to covenant that we know. Because we actually just, after almost 12 years of being married, we just paid off our student loans. But that's one of those crazy things, like they will never go away. It's this nagging thing. But the thing about student loans is like, you know the cost going into it, and at the time, it's worth it. You have a dream, you have a goal, you have a hope, and you measure the cost and you say, this is what I want for not only now, but for my future. And so you sign on that dotted line and you have a constant reminder every month when your bill comes through that you made a decision now that is impacting your future. And that's exactly what marriage is. Marriage is a decision that you make now and the love that you have for each other. But it isn't about the love that you feel for each other now. It's about the love that you want to have for each other later. It's about a future love. And it's a declaration that you make at a wedding. And I love, traditionally, weddings have declarations and vows. And one of those talks about the love that you currently have for each other. And the other one talks about the love that you profess to continue to have for each other. And so this idea of covenant, it's this binding together, it's this forming together of both law and love. And I love that in the scriptures, Paul says, he says, husbands ought to love their wives. I love that. He knows. Like there's an obligation to this at some point in our journey, right? He brings this obligation, this, you committed to this, you signed up for this, you are reminded of this, and there are times in your marriage and in your life where you will not feel like it, but you decided to do so. And so really what Laurel and I have understood over our marriage is that our covenant, that our marriage is way more about choice than it is about feeling. It's way more about action than it is about emotion. And that's something that we kind of want to unpack a little bit more this morning.
We have a couple marriage myths and marriage tips that we have for you. And we completely agree that that marriage, it's labeled as old-fashioned, but we think it's very relevant for today. We still think people are running to get married out of the church, in the church, all over. And it's interesting why from that poll. But we read a statistic, 17 million new viewers a month on Match.com. Isn't that crazy? It's like people are looking for that person, and they did a study mostly for the men that are getting on for Match. That's right. And they asked them, what are you looking for? What's your end goal? And there was a very small percentage that still said, I just want someone for, you know, a week or a night or whatever. I just want the quick fix. But most people from the men's side said, I want someone to rub my back when I'm sick. I want them there when I'm throwing up. Basically to say, I want them to see the good and the bad in me and still to choose me. And I want it to be a long-term thing. And I thought that was fascinating that that people are still pursuing this thing that we call old-fashioned and still hold it to a high standard.
And speaking of throwing up, there's this other thing called The Bachelor, which is like...
That's right.
This crazy, ridiculous method to find a lifelong partner. But it's amazing that it's being displayed on every television across the world and that people are flocking to this idea of a destination where people would put a ring on it and live their lives together forever, even though I don't know anybody has in the whole history.
Oh, they have. We can, yeah, see?
Yeah, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
But the first myth we want to talk about is that everything gets easier. So if I get married, everything will get easier. So talking about the marriage or the dating scene, if I just find someone, I won't have to date anymore and I won't have to make my accounts and my emails and go on dates and awkward coffee meetups and, you know, blind dates and all of those things. And I don't think that it necessarily gets easier. It gets different. And we start going through different seasons of life. And they all come with their different challenges and different, different seasons. And we've been through, in the last 12 years of marriage, lots of different seasons where one of us is stronger, one of us is going through something, friend issues, sickness issues.
You all issues. Church issues.
Kids addition to the family, and those seasons make our life and our relationship beautiful together. And through going through those seasons and through choosing to go through them together, I think the peaks and the valleys have gotten less. It's become closer. And they still happen, but if you know and you've practiced going through those different seasons, that part can kind of become easier. And your space in between you can become something that you know how to anticipate those seasons and changes coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's this other thing about this idea of things will get easier in the Christian world. If you grew up in the church, you're like, man, I can finally have sex. Or I can finally have sex, says Pastor Shalise, who's counting the days down. I believe it's 57, 58 days, 50 days.
56, penalty. I think.
You need to add 8 more days. But it's an interesting, crazy thing to think about. And I think really one of the biggest misconceptions, the biggest myths, is that if you could just have sex, at least without guilt or shame, that everything will be easier. And it's just not true. It's awesome, but it's not that there isn't any complications that come along the way with that. And it's a interesting thing. I think another myth is a far pendulum swing from that. Not only that it makes everything easier, but that it makes everything miserable, your life is over, it's all done for good, which is, I think, another huge myth. And this is one that I actually hear all the time, right? And if you're strong, independent, older woman who just got married, Jessica Yamada, you know, and Evan, we love you guys. I'm just calling you out because you're in the front row. It's like Shamu splash zone if you sit in the front. You know, but what I'm trying to say is it becomes more real, this center of gravity being shifted. Especially the more independent and autonomous as you are as a person. And your strength as a person will cause some friction in a relationship. And so I think people point to that and they say, oh, it's the end of myself. And you're absolutely right. I think the scriptures point to that. They say that the two will become one. And it is true that yourself is now dead. And the scriptures point to this time and time again through resurrection. It says that the seed must die and go into the earth before it brings fruit, before it grows up from the ground. And it's a very real statement to say that you're done forever when you get married. But what comes from it, what springs from it, is a life and a fruit that you never could have had before you laid that down. And I think one of the things that has been helpful for us is to realize that it is hard work to be married, but if you understand that it's teamwork, it's even easier. And I think sometimes we can get at odds with each other, and we can be at odds and fighting with each other and trying to even tackle certain circumstances or things that come our way separately. And one of the things that is the most helpful to us is to remind each other all the time, why are we fighting? We're on the same team. Like, especially when it's the kids, it's like it's us against them, you know? Like, why are we arguing about parenting? Like, we're on the same team. We have the same goal, the same vision, the same future together. And I think when you realize that now you have a teammate, that it's teamwork, the challenge becomes bearable. It's fun.
I think another myth is that when you get married, you're stuck with the same person forever. And it's this very, like, daunting, I'm going to be the rest of my life with this monotonous same person. And I can tell you, in the last, you know, even when we were dating, in the last 15 years, I've been married to probably 80 different Derricks. So he didn't, plus the mustache, the looks and the taste, but he didn't like coffee when we first started dating. He thought tea tasted like dirt. He did not own a pair of shoes. He only had flip-flops. The toes were worn in. He wore them so much. My siblings used to count how many times he said bro and dude. And he had long hair. And then it went really short, and he dyed it. And the way we used to communicate before all this, the text era and the email, is AIM, the messenger. The little sound would come on, and Messy Bright Spike would sign on, and I'd go in. And it's been so fun, and even continuing, and then we get married, and I get to see him turn into a father, and the hero that Mark spoke about, that he likened himself to as well. And I got to see him mature and change, and I still know he's gonna change, and it's exciting to pursue. And I don't think we're responsible for those changes, but I think we're, as a spouse and another person, responsible to create an environment where we can allow that person to thrive and to change too. So.
Yeah, it's so true that you never stay married to the same person, right? And it's amazing, you can wake up in the morning and be like, whoa, you are a different person, hello. My name's Derek, what's your name? It's amazing to see just the different seasons of life that we can go through. And each change in life, each struggle that we make it through, there's a different version of Laurel that I'm married to. And it's been amazing to see how much resilience can shape who she is. And, you know, to see her go from this strong-headed, kind of antagonistic person towards relationships when we first met, to become soft and sensitive. It's funny, when we started dating, even though she was super into me, she didn't want anyone to know. So she had this whole weird thing about labels, like, dude, we don't really need to be dating, and it doesn't mean anything. So to see her move from that to, like, owning that space of claiming me first. And she was, like, that strong-spirited person that, like, I thought, there's no, like, I might have to change my last name type thing. You know? And to see her go from, like, okay, now I'll date you, to now I'll spend my life with you, to now let's make a home together. And to see her go from college student who literally took for like 4 years. I just served her, cooked, cleaned, drove 2.5-3 hours from LA to San Diego. And to see that come full circle to a place where she has been serving me and our children so faithfully in different seasons, and the different person that you have become with each addition to the family. And you see how graceful you are and how new you are in each and every one of those seasons. It's a true miracle.
Sometimes the other person decides you're going to change too, like signing you up for a half marathon or something like that.
Yeah, or signing me up to coach baseball. I don't know anything about it.
You got the hat, though.
I do got the hat. Yeah.
And one of the other marriage myths is that you complete me. And it's like, how many songs are about this and just ideas that this person is going to complete who I am, and I'm not a whole person until I find somebody that's going to be a partner in my life. And I was strong, and I think I realized the value that you can be complete by yourself. And that's a beautiful thing too. And I think you should go into a marriage being a complete person. And it's not normal math. When one and one get together, it should be two, but it's one plus one and you're not halves, but you still equal one. And all of a sudden this amazing things happens where you coincide and you share a space, but you're still supporting a complete whole person, which I love.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another misconception is if we could just live together before we're married, everything will be easier, or everything we'll be able to know if our marriage will work. And all of the science and studies show that that's absolutely not true, and that it actually can cause more chaos in a relationship than it does good. But I think one of the most compelling things about this idea is that when you live together or just date or whatever, when you don't have a covenant that binds you together, you have to keep putting your best foot forward. You have to keep proving that the chemistry is there. You have to keep putting on your best face and keep kind of marketing yourself in this consumeristic relationship to each other. But when you move into a type of relationship where there's a covenant that binds you together, that gives you the freedom to truly be yourself, to truly let the walls down, to truly be seen, and to be loved for who you are. And I think that the safety that comes from a covenant is worth the wait. It's worth the wait to move into a space where you can share life together and be truly known and loved.
And being in a space where you can be so vulnerable and open with someone in a covenant and in a marriage, I think, you know, that starting when you're married is such a beautiful thing. I remember talking to my dad when we were engaged, thinking, and I've talked now in the past 12 years to multiple friends who in the engaged period have questions, and they say, you know, is this right? Should I marry this person? Big things are still coming up. Is it okay to doubt? And I remember him telling me, yes, it's okay to doubt, because when you return and you choose that person again, it strengthens your resolve, and you can go into this knowing that you've questioned everything, you've turned it over. It's not about them putting on their perfect face, and then you enter into that covenant and can leave behind all the questioning of should I still pursue this? You've already chosen.
But we do agree that the perfect face is one with a mustache on it. Is that true? Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I hear multiple things out there.
We have a deal. We have a bet going on, so we'll see what happens. I might have it forever. If the baby's a boy, I keep it forever. If the baby's a girl, I'll never grow it back. So we'll see.
So extreme.
So moving on from some marriage myths, we thought that it'd be helpful to just give some marriage tips, just some things that we've learned along the way that we think would be helpful. And the first one that we kind of, we drive this home every time we do premarital counseling with
and
someone.
And we're so good at it.
We're experts at it. Is this idea, this balance between communication and expectation. And really, it goes the other way around, right? It's these expectations that we have, but they only truly matter and contribute something to a relationship when they are communicated. It was a cute thing the other night. We were hanging out with Jess and Evan, and Jess was like, it's just so hard because I have so many expectations. I don't know how to communicate all of them. And I think that's part of the challenge. And kind of this phrase that we use with people is make sure that your expectations are clear, communicated, and realistic. And I think so many times we mess that up. We don't get that right. But before we get mad at each other, we ask ourselves the question, is there an unmet expectation? And did I communicate it? And even if I did communicate it, was it clear? And even if it was clear, was it realistic? And I think that has been so helpful to us. We mess it up all the time. But that is kind of it's a leveling field for us before we can get too heated and mad at each other.
Yeah, I used to be, I've gotten a lot better at this, but I used to want a mind reader. And poor Derek, I would not give any clues, no expectations. I would just expect him to know what I was wanting, needing, thinking. And it didn't give any room for grace. And I feel like that's in a lot of relationship, any relationship we have with family or friends, there's this idea that if we tell them what we want, it diminishes the value of them serving us or them fulfilling that expectation. And I found it to be the opposite when I finally started telling you what I needed and gave you, let you off the hook so you didn't have to keep trying to guess, because that's a big role to try to fill.
It was so bad, the only way I knew I missed an expectation was the silent stare out the window.
Which now my son does to me, and I'm like, oh
yeah.
My gosh. That's how it feels.
It would drive me absolute nuts to know that I didn't do something right, but didn't know it, and the only way I knew it was without talking. And so we've come a long ways in this to where she truly can communicate her expectations to me, which she has a lot of, and I have of her. And sometimes it's not all that magical or mystical. The best way that we communicate with each other right now is literally through a shared calendar, which sounds so intimate and like so life-giving. But it's amazing. Like, and we found our own little tweaks. Like we use emojis now. Like, you know, put something in there to like, you do the like, when you put something in there, she knows like you kind of feel bad about it, but you're committed to it anyways type thing. And that's the way we communicate. Like, you know, going surfing with my buddies. And so it works for us.
One of the other tips we have is, unfortunately, I know this is going to be a shock to you, but the spark will eventually fade in dating. And there was some scientific evidence I read about how much your body can actually take of this adrenaline from new relationships that everybody seeks for. Everyone talks about that spark, that connection. Was it there? Was it not? And your body can only really maintain that the gaining adrenaline from somebody else for about 6 to 9 months. And then it goes away. It becomes normal. And so one of the things our culture does is I feel like it's very easy to become addicted to, well, I need to find someone else that gives me that spark. Since this is gone, I need something new. There must be something wrong. But there's a deeper type of love, and there's you know, there is the spark love, and that is wonderful, and that is beautiful, and seasons can come of those, but there's a sacrificial love, and there's a substance love that are deeper, and when you experience those later, they're far beyond and more profound than that spark, that initial spark that you're looking for.
I absolutely remember the first time we held hands.
And San Francisco.
It was in San Francisco, leaving a parking garage on Geary Street, and you literally could have seen a spark. I mean, it was one of those awkward things where you kind of like brush up against her hand to see if she would like take the bait, and she did, and it was like the night sky lit up. And it's amazing, like when we brush against each other now, it still happens, like no, it doesn't at all. But, you know, the embrace of a hand now is so different. When we hold hands now, they're actually different hands. They're hands who have cared for children. They're hands who heal in her profession. They're hands that serve so faithfully. And it's a different kind of embrace. And the science shows that so much of that spark, it's actually not about what they are or who they are to you. It's about you. It's about ego boost. It's about you being stoked they are into you or chose you. And I think over time, it goes the other way, to where you can really start to appreciate the other person. And that substance love and that sacrificial love, it brings about a bond that's different. I think the reason why we keep searching for all these things in these relationships and the spark is because we know that to be loved and unknown, it's like comforting, right? But it's so superficial. But then there's this other piece of us that's absolutely terrified to be truly known and have this belief that you are unlovable. But on the other side of all of that is this space that we get to enter into through marriage, through this covenant, where you can be truly known for all that you are and to be truly loved. And it's this beautiful representation and expression of the way God loves us. And the scriptures all throughout its entirety talk about marriage as a metaphor of the way God pursues us and how we are his bride. And it's this beautiful, beautiful metaphor of a love that is unwarranted, that is unconditional, that goes beyond any sort of performance or pleasing that we can do for each other. And that kind of love, to be truly known, and to be loved, is unbelievable, to the point where we have a covenant that holds us together, and she gets so frustrated. We could be fighting, and I could be like, babe, we need to get over this, because tomorrow you're still going to be married to me, and we're going to be okay. Like, we're still, so let's just not do the game. Let's not do the heated thing. Let's just be okay now. Cool? High five? I don't always get one. But it's a way to know that
it even canceled all of my anger.
even in the crazy anger chaos, you have a binding, a covenant that you just know it's going to be okay, and it's an amazing journey for us.
Another tip is it's not about perfection; it's about direction, and we think that two people who come together definitely need to know the direction they're heading in order to define who they are. Even to go as far as writing a marriage statement, we have all of our premarital couples do that. And it's good. It puts it on paper what you stand for, who you are, who you want to become. And perfection is its whole different category, where we, our culture wants to see perfect marriages. They immediately are looking for things that are imperfect. But the beauty is that imperfect actually is what's more satisfying in community. And so we've been very intentional about finding people that we can be honest with, imperfect in front of, which is most people. We used to make people, I had friends that would tell me, it makes me uncomfortable when you have discussions in front of me, because she just wasn't used to seeing, you know, discussions or fighting or real talk in front of couples. She wanted the end result. And I think that's what a lot of people want. But we need to be comfortable being imperfect. And who's any This Is Us fans in here? Yes. This isn't a spoiler, but a couple episodes ago, he says he was describing their marriage, and I cried because he was just so, who doesn't every episode? But he talked about how perfect their relationship was. And then he changed it and he said, we're perfectly imperfect. And I thought, that's exactly what it is, because there are great things about it, but we want to recognize that we're imperfect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the practical ways that we make sure that we're headed in the same direction is we take time every anniversary. We get away. Sometimes it's literally to our backyard or somewhere, and we have a journal that we write in, and we plan the next year of what we want our lives to look like, who we want to become, the things that we want to accomplish. And it's amazing. This last season for us has been ridiculous. It's been awful, crazy, busy. But we were working towards something together, and so it was tolerable. We were working towards getting out of debt, and so I was working extra, and she was working extra, and we weren't seeing each other, and we were ships passing in the night. But we knew it was all in season, that it was something that we were working together on, and so there was no room for resentment. There was no room for the missed expectations. It was something that we agreed to together, and I think it's so important to know that our marriage isn't perfect. The last few months of ours are not a perfect example of a marriage. I wouldn't recommend what we did the last few months, but it was for a goal that we were working to together, and we were moving in the same direction. I think it's so important. The other thing that I wanted to kind of close with is this idea that marriage is truly about sacrifice, not about compromise. And I think you hear this all the time in that you can come into this place, and like Laurel said, sometimes we think we need to give half of ourselves to each other, and then it will make the one that the scriptures talk about. But really, it's about us laying the fullness of who we are down for each other, sacrificing completely who we are to each other, and that's how we get to the one being bound together. And I think, I hate the word compromise because it means you both lose. When you both give half of yourself or you both meet in the middle, you lose. You both are paying for it. But when you live in a type of relationship where you can both sacrifice and submit to each other, it creates this space that is so sacred between you. And I think it's not only something that happens in our relationships with each other, but it's the exact model that God chose to relate to us with. God didn't compromise himself. He didn't give us half of himself and expect half of us to each other. When God stepped into human history, he took on flesh and blood, lived a perfect and sinless life, and he laid that perfect life down, sacrificed all of it completely for us. And then in turn, he says that he invites us to do the same for each other, to lay our lives down, to sacrifice ourselves for each other, so that we can serve each other to this end, that we can see each other come fully alive. And that's really what marriage is. It's this beautiful metaphor. It's this beautiful coming together, this laying down and this building up that really moves itself into this life-giving give and take that is so beautiful to experience together. But we know that as lofty as these concepts of marriage are, and as beautiful as a marriage can be, that it isn't easy. And that there is so many different stories in this room when it comes to the way we relate to each other. So many of us have personally experienced divorce. We've been through it. So many of us have been the product of a relationship that failed or a love that was lost. In fact, I believe so many of us are in this room this morning and we're in the middle of probably the greatest fight of our life, trying to hang on to something or carry something that feels so heavy. And what I think is important for us to talk about together as the church is that these ideals and that these conventions and these hopes for marriage are so significant and they're so important, but they are not nearly as important as the entirety of what the gospel says, which is that reconciliation and that hope and that forgiveness and that love is available to anyone and to everyone who needs it. And so no matter where you're at in your relationship status with someone, we absolutely believe that reconciliation is possible in every marriage. We believe that forgiveness is possible between two people. We believe that there's hope for healing and that there's hope for restoration. And that's our hope this morning, is that we as a church would stop measuring the ideals of marriage and using that as a judgment tool to look down on other people. to create a standard that says if you're not hitting this, or if you're not joyful in all of this, or if it isn't easy and beautiful and bright, that you're less than. We as a church want to be a place of safety where you can be vulnerable and honest in the fight that you're in for your life, for your relationship, for hope and for healing and for forgiveness. And so this morning, we just want to invite you into that. The band is going to play as another song, and this is a chance for us to I think square up a bit, to kind of look inside and think about the hopes and dreams that we have for our lives, particularly in our marriages, in our future marriages, in our next marriages, in whatever that would look like for you.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.